Hello, I'm Elizabeth Nonemaker of Ampersand, Annenberg Radio News' new arts and culture podcast. I'm here with Henry Jenkins to talk about graphic novels and particularly Art Spiegelman's current touring performance called Wordless. For some background, Wordless is a collaboration between the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Mouse and the Philip Johnston Quartet. Spiegelman walks audiences through a historical tour of the earliest graphic novels through images projected on a large slide. It includes works by Franz Masriel, Lind Ward, and Mitt Gross. He discusses their contributions to the art form and also their influence on him as an artist. Selected works by these artists are shown on screen while accompanied by a live and original score. Now, Henry, thank you very much for talking.
Happy to be here.
Can you explain a little bit more about what you teach? You specialize in something called participatory media. What is that?
Well, I'm interested in the ways everyday people engage with media in their lives. So we've seen revolutions, I think, in the last couple of decades, which have expanded the access of everyday people to the means of cultural production and circulation. So through Annenberg, I teach courses on things like fandom, participatory culture, and Web 2.0. We're teaching about participatory politics. And most pertinent to today's discussion, I teach a course on comics and graphic storytelling.
What do you study in there?
We're giving students exposure to the full range of what pictures and words can do together. We go back to the beginnings of comic strips in the early 20th century and forward to the most contemporary graphic novels. We read comics mostly from the US and Great Britain. We also look at Japan. We look at France. We look at other European traditions. Just give a sense of this is a global phenomenon.
Do you qualify graphic novels as participatory media, or is it something in its own?
Not necessarily. I mean, definitely we are seeing more people create their own comics, the so-called mini-comics phenomenon. We're seeing more people participate on the web than ever before, and web comics have been an important space of diversifying who creates comics. But comics still is largely a professional realm and largely one that's controlled in the United States by a very limited number of publishers. It has all the properties of a mass media, except it lacks the mass. That if we were looking at comics readers in the U.S. today, we're talking about less than a million people reading comics and graphic novels, which makes it one of the nichiest of the dominant media in American society. Its impact on the culture is much greater than that because of the ways it functions as a research and design space for the rest of the media industry. So we're seeing comics content in film, on television, in video games, and increasingly in the fine arts. But its actual footprint as a medium is small, but still very, very centralized.
Back to the Wordless performance, kind of a general question. What did you think about it?
I thought it was very nice. Spiegelman has been almost as important as a curator and someone who's trying to form the canon of what we should pay attention to as we think about comics in our culture. And he's done that through his own work, something like In the Shadow of No Towers, really brought together early 20th century comics with mediations on 9/11. He's done it through his editorial work. He publishes books that bring together classic comics. And he's done it through his performance work. And this is one of a number of pieces he's done that reflects back on the history of comics. He had helped edit the works of Lind Ward for the New American Library, which was a breakthrough first graphic artist to be included in that collection of books that frequently includes Twain and, you know, Hemingway and Faulkner and so forth. That to represent Lind Ward's work there was very important. So this performance was interesting because of the trajectory it took us through the emergence of this concept of graphic novels.
It was really
novels.
Like a lecture.
It is a lecture.
Yeah, but a really engaging one.
I mean, he's such a powerful speaker, such an engaging personality, and so knowledgeable about the form. So I knew most of the works he was presenting, but not all of them. I mean, he's shifting the canon so dramatically that he was introducing new works into the mix, and the use of music there to really bring out and focus our attention on the wordless pictures was really an interesting innovation.
Yeah. What was new to you?
There was a piece called Parade that comes fairly late in the program by an artist who really had just been neglected by history. And it really was a beautiful use of very abstract kinds of line and design, coupled with a very powerful anti-war story from someone who had survived the camps in World War II and had come out the other side and was trying to tell the world something of the experience of militarization.
This was the artist who I think was 93 and lived in Pennsylvania, and Spiegelman said that he just sort of tracked him down. He didn't really give background as to how he found him, and I was really interested in that, but his drawing style was really different from the rest of the work that Spiegelman was showing.
Yeah, it was an interesting meeting point, because there's a tradition called abstract comics, which really are line, color, shade, movement, but very little sense of representation or stories. And then there's this tradition of wordless comics, which is conveying stories without the use of dialogue or written narration. Frequently, they have words in the design in the physical space, but not text that explains what we're seeing. And this was a kind of weird merger of the two, but it really is much more abstract than anything I've ever seen coming out of wordless comics. So in some sense, he's an idiolect, right? He's someone who's lived and worked alone and created his own mode of expression. But I think take Spiegelman's appreciation for it. He opened that work up to a new audience that it never would have seen otherwise.
Definitely. So Spiegelman brought in these artists also to explain his own influences. And a lot of the stories that he presented were really brutal and dismal and kind of unredeeming. Like, the trajectory of them was often there's a character, a guy or a girl, they get a bad rap in life, it continues, and then they die. The end. And that's pretty common in a lot of other genres, but it seemed particularly brutal to me without the words. Did that have that same effect on you?
It does. It's very powerful stuff. So the wordless comics tradition has been very much tied with political critique from the very beginning. And if we look at contemporary examples, Eric Drucker's Flood, Drucker became one of the central artists of the Occupy movement. And it has some of that same woodcut-like feel. In my class, we teach Peter Cooper's The System, that really looks at the city as a system of corruption and inequality, ends with self-destruction for many of the characters. There's a kind of apocalyptic edge to that particular school of comics.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see its impact on Spiegelman, because Spiegelman walks in a very curious path. I mean, if you think on the surface about the work that Spiegelman has done, the Holocaust, 9/11, his mother's suicide, these are probably the works of Spiegelman that are best known. They're always incredibly dark.
Yes.
But he has a comic tone on top of them, and in any cases, that makes you feel the pain a little less and opens you up to a deeper reflection about it. That's because he melds this wordless comics tradition with these grotesque styles, which he would trace back to Winsor McCay, some of the artists of the 40s and 50s, Walt Kelly, for example, who did Pogo, Basil Wolverton, who he featured fairly prominently in that talk, who designed the kind of grotesque character from the cover of Mad. And then he also draws heavily on EC Comics, the horror comics of the 1950s, which had their own kind of macabre sense of humor that I think feeds into this. So here we have this guy who began his career doing Garbage Pail Kids and Wacky Pack bubblegum cards, who brought together two traditions that almost never spoke to each other anywhere else and created a unique style of comics that I think did cross the cultural hierarchy. It was their comics that literary scholars aren't embarrassed to acknowledge they read. They're comics that have gained respectability in the art world. So for better or for worse, Spiegelman has been someone who tacks both the high and low of comics and creates cultural respectability around them, and has paved the way for many, many other artists through his editorial work at Raw and through just his example. His success makes it possible, say, for Alison Bechdel to do Fun Home or any of the other graphic, yeah, you know, graphic novels that we think of today.
Mm-hmm. You said that you like the music very much. I mean, in some way, it's causing you to have a particular reaction. Do you think that added to the experience?
I didn't always agree with the music's interpretation of some of the comics. I think Spiegelman makes the point that these comics have a dense amount of detail and they're things we read at our own pace. So there's something already challenging about having them projected at a set speed. And music gave some grounding to that. There's a way in which, if we look at these comics from the first couple of decades of the 20th century, that we're looking at imagery that has more in common with silent film than with anything else.
Yes.
And because Philip Johnson has done so much work for silent cinema, in some ways, the kind of music we are hearing here is the kind of contemporary scoring for silent film that you would see by the Allori Orchestra or the Clubfoot Orchestra or any number of other jazz bands that are now doing really interesting work to reinterpret silent film. So that's the tradition it came out of, and I think it really worked in relation to that material.
Yeah, you've talked about Art Spiegelman as a curator. What do you think about his work?
I think he would make anyone's canon of the most important graphic artist of the second half of the 20th century. I mean, he's had a lasting impact. I think Maus opened many, many doors. Spiegelman has himself said lately it's been overrated. It's celebrated often for the exclusion of dozens of other work. So I think he's a major talent. I think he understands the medium of comics about as well as anyone I can think of. And he's achieved it with a very limited body of work, which is itself oddly impressive. For Spiegelman, creating comics is a huge labor. And he talks often about that in interviews. So there are artists, say Brian Talbot, who would be the British counterpart of Art Spiegelman and who created some of the first graphic novels in the UK, who says he produces a page a day, whereas Spiegelman took like 6 months to do the 10 pages of In the Shadow of No Towers.
Right.
But because of that, Spiegelman focuses so much on every detail and every element of the page. There are very few other graphic artists working today who know their medium as deeply as Spiegelman does.
You're mentioning the British cartoonist reminded me. Art Spiegelman and Philip Johnson gave a private talk before the performance, and they were comparing jazz and comics and how they were sort of partner art forms. And they also mentioned that they were particularly American art forms. Do you think that's true? I was reminded of manga in particular. That goes back to, I think, like the 19th century, and then there are graphic novels all over the world. Do you think that our comics are particularly American? Is there something that we're doing here that's different from other countries' works?
Well, I think that argument that we're making takes its roots back to a guy named Gilbert Seldes, who wrote a book in the late 20s called The Lively Arts. He made a very strong case that America was developing a distinctive aesthetic tradition that existed alongside the European traditions. For him, that was going to be urban, popular, it was going to be in the vernacular, and he really celebrated at a time few people were cinema, comics, jazz, the Broadway musical as distinctively American art forms. Now, we've since discovered that, in fact, Americans were not the first to create comics. We've discovered how far back various forms of storytelling art existed in Japan, in China, scroll pictures of one sort or another that have many of the same attributes. Some today would trace comics back to things like the Bayeu Tapestry, This is a case that Scott McCloud has made. Certainly, as we get into the 20th century, the American comics remains a distinctive tradition, but we probably are less passionate today about comics than many other parts of the world. The French-Belgian comic tradition, it's just like a religion in that region, and massive festivals held each year in celebration of the comics traditions there. Manga is read by almost everyone in Japanese society, and they're growing comics production in Africa, in the Middle East, in Latin America, that really we need to pay attention to if we're going to tell a story of comics. So Americans have an incredibly parochial conception of what this medium looks like. And it looks and functions very, very differently in all of these different national cultures because it picks up on folk art, it picks up on their higher art traditions. Even where we've left our imprint in the world, it's been surprising. Superhero comics, for example, were banned in most of the Southern Hemisphere throughout the second half of the 20th century. So there, Mandrake the Magician, the Phantom, characters that barely register on our understanding of our own culture continue to be powerful American forces there. Our own media is read differently than other parts of the world.
Is that why you think it's important to study comics academically?
Well, I think it's one of many reasons. I think anyone who's going into the entertainment industry needs to understand comics because it really is the feeder for many of the ideas that are shaping contemporary media. I think if you're looking at any kind of visual communication, and anyone who is in journalism should be thinking about the role of words and images, comics give you a way of really thinking deeply about what those relationships are. And I think anyone interested in visual arts, this is both a art form in its own that is gaining greater and greater respectability and a huge influence on almost any artist who's come out since the latter half of the 20th century.
Thank you so much for coming in to talk.
Happy to do it.